What's Universal Time? Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Victor Beatty reporting. Hundreds of thousands demonstrated Sunday in the Catalonian capital, Barcelona, in opposition to an independence declaration from Spain. The crowd estimated to number 350,000 waved Spanish and Catalan flags and chanted, "Catalonia is Spain, and together we are stronger." This pro-Spain protester said not all Catalonians are separatists. Many more, he said, feel they are Spanish and want to belong to Spain. Catalonia held an independence referendum last week that Madrid called illegal. More than 40% of voters took part, and the vast majority voted yes. Monash University analyst Stuart King was asked what Catalan President Carles Puigdemont may do when he addresses Parliament Tuesday.
I think he will declare that Catalonia is independent. I personally don't think that he is particularly in favor of independence. I think he has been sort of pushed into this by sort of political forces, much of which is his own making.
Saturday, Spanish Prime Minister Mariano Rajoy said he would not rule out removing the regional government and calling new elections if it issues a declaration of independence. In the Democratic Republic of Congo's restive northeast, militants Saturday ambushed a group of civilians, killing many of them, sparking a battle with government troops near the city of Beni along the Ugandan border. It is an area that has seen numerous massacres in recent years, leaving hundreds of people dead. The rebel Allied Democratic Forces, made up mostly of Ugandan Muslims, is suspected of having carried out the ambush. Human Rights Watch has blamed the group for hundreds of deaths in the region in the last 3 years. This is VOA News. In Syria, U.S.-backed rebels said they have been their final assault to take the city of Raqqa from Islamic State, once the de facto capital of its caliphate extending to Iraq. U.S.-led airstrikes have picked up the tempo in recent days. The other IS-held city, Mosul, in Iraq, fell to Iraqi forces early this year. Meanwhile, Turkish troops have clashed with the jihadists as Ankara masses troops for an expected thrust into Syria's northwestern Idlib province. Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan said his forces are in constant touch with its Free Syrian allies in the front lines. He said Turkey is implementing a plan to reduce violence blamed on al-Qaeda-linked Hayat Tahrir al-Sham by creating a de-escalation zone to secure its own frontier. Turkey and the U.S. Sunday mutually reduced visa services following detention of a U.S. employee last week, charged with links to a U.S.-based exiled cleric that Turkey blames for last year's failed coup. Ankara has demanded Fethullah Gulen be extradited to Turkey. The U.S. so far says Turkey's evidence does not match what's required in their extradition agreement. Gulen has denied any involvement. Israel arrested two Palestinians suspected of killing an Israeli man found dead last week. The motive for last week's killing of Reuven Shmerlin in the Arab-Israeli city of Kfir Qasim is not yet known. Officials called it terrorism. Meanwhile, thousands of Israeli and Palestinian women arrived in Jerusalem Sunday after a two-week trek through Israel and the West Bank demanding peace. Among those participating in the Women's Wage Peace Movement, Vivian Silver.
We went through three horrific wars in the space of 6 years. At the end of the third one, I said, no more. We each have to do whatever we can to stop the next war. And it's possible. We must reach a diplomatic agreement.
Many of the 8,000 participants wore white clothing, a symbol of peace. At least a dozen people died after a boat capsized carrying refugees fleeing Myanmar on its way to Bangladesh. They're part of an exodus of Rohingya Muslims from neighboring Rakhine State in Myanmar, also known as Burma, since a military crackdown got underway last August. Saqil Faizullah is one of the UN Children Agency officials on the scene caring for refugees in Cox's Bazar in Bangladesh.
They are occupying 9.6 million square meters of space, which is equivalent to 889 football stadiums.
UNICEF is preparing to administer 650,000 doses of a cholera vaccine to refugees, the largest effort of its kind since Haiti last year. And Switzerland has called for a quick release of a Swiss woman reportedly abducted in Sudan's Darfur region. She reportedly served as a humanitarian aid worker. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voices of America. I'm James Bate in Washington. Today is Monday, October 9th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Liberia's crucial presidential and parliamentary election is tomorrow, Tuesday.
My first appeal to everybody is please try to turn out, because if you don't go to the polls, the people that will go will make a decision for you, and you're going to live with that decision for the next 6 years. Second, to make sure that you go with your voter card. Because without the voter card, you're not
going to
vote.
Jerome Kokoya is chair of the National Elections Commission of Liberia. Uganda marks 55 years of independence today, Monday. But the main opposition leader says the country today is no different from 55 years ago. And Ethiopia's parliament opens today on the anniversary of the state of emergency, but probably without the Speaker of Parliament.
Concerning the resignation of Honorable Badula Gamada, what we know is unless another speaker is elected, the current incumbent speaker has the mandate.
Lengeri Lencho is the Ethiopia's information minister. Uganda entices world investors to boost conservation tourism. And the New Yorker magazine publishes a book entitled Ordinary Women and Men Fighting Extremism in Africa. Those stories, plus Samson O'Malley's post and our listener of the day, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Liberia's crucial presidential and parliamentary election take place tomorrow, Tuesday. There are a total of 20 candidates all vying to succeed President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf, Africa's first elected female president, who, according to the Constitution, cannot run for a third term. There are also 980 candidates for 73 seats in the House of Representatives. The top presidential candidates are businessman Benoni Urie, former Coca-Cola executive Alexander Cummings, former National Bank Governor J. Mills Jones, incumbent Vice President Joseph Boakai, Charles Bromsky, and Senator George Weah. Some analysts said the outcome is unpredictable. Elections Commission Chair Jerome Kokoya says his commission is ready, and he's urging all registered voters to exercise their constitutional duty by turning out to vote on Tuesday.
We are well prepared, and we are hoping that by Tuesday morning, 8 o'clock, we'll be all set.
When you talked last week, you mentioned that ballot papers for the House of Representatives were due to arrive. Have those papers arrived?
Oh, sure. Yeah, they've all arrived. We awarded a contract to print ballots to a European company, but because of the extraordinary length of some of the ballots, especially in the Mazzarato County area, as a result of some of the many committees, so the printer had some problem making such a huge number on the ballot paper and then inserting the serial number that comes at the top.
What is it I've been reading on the social media about printing of additional ballots? Some people say maybe a million ballots more. What's the truth?
First of all, let me start by saying the planning for election means planning for things that you would not expect, because you do not have the luxury to postpone elections. Election has to be done on the date that the Constitution calls for. Now, if you are conducting elections in a country like this, where people will go, and not only here, anywhere else, the elections have been done for the people themselves. So it is important that they have that opportunity to vote. So if a voter appears at the polls, and for example, and fill in a ballot paper that he or she realizes is improperly done, so long that voter has not placed that paper in the box, that voter is entitled to a replacement of that ballot paper. Where do you get that replacement from if you do not have a buffer?
Any particular message to the ordinary person who will be voting on Tuesday? Any message you have for them?
Friends, we would like to encourage them to turn out, no matter the weather condition, because, you know, unfortunately, we do elections here during the rain. Even if it is raining on that particular Tuesday, my first appeal to everybody is please try to turn out and take that little inconvenience for the next 6 years. Because if you don't go to the polls, the people that will go will make a decision for you, and you're going to live with that decision for the next 6 years. So I encourage them first to be there. Second, to make sure that you go with your voter card. Because without the voter card, you're not going to vote. And when we say voter card, we're not talking about previous cards, like the 2005, 2011, 2014. Those cards have completely outlived the usefulness. They will not be accepted. And third, if you're not sure on the room you're going to vote in, you can text your voter card to 1847. If you have a cell phone, you can enter your voter card and text it to 1847. Your whole profile would appear, and the room number where you're supposed to go would appear. We have done all of those just to help them to make it convenient. And so we appeal to all to turn out and vote on the 10th of October for your next president and representatives.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, James.
Jerome Kokoya, Chair of Liberia's Elections Commission. He was speaking with me from the capital, Monrovia. Ethiopia's parliament opens today on the anniversary of the state of emergency, but probably without the Speaker of Parliament, Abdullah Gamenda, who has confirmed his resignation, but without saying why. Gamenda is a former president of Ethiopia's Oromia state, one of the regions that have been involved in anti-government protests. There's been speculation that Gamenda resigned over the government handling of the Oromia crisis. Lenjeri Lencho, Ethiopia's information minister, says unless Gamenda's resignation is accepted by the ruling party, he, Gamenda, is still considered the Speaker of Parliament.
We have verified information that Speaker of Parliament, Honorable Abdullah Gamenda, has submitted his resignation to his party, the OPDO, as well as His Excellency, the Prime Minister of Ethiopia, Haile Mariam Desalegn. So according to the legal procedure, Honorable Abdullah Gamenda will be given appropriate response to his resignation request. This is the information we have so far.
So is it true that he's resigning because of the way the government is handling the crisis in the Oromia region?
So far, he has not specifically mentioned the reason, and he promised that once he is allowed to resign, he is going to disclose his reason. But although we don't know exactly what the reason is, we understand that a senior leader like Abdullah Gamenda won't resign without having a valid reason.
We understand that when the former speaker was making the announcement of his resignation, he was sitting between the flag of Ethiopia and the flag of the Oromia state. We understand he used to be president of the Oromia state. Does that speak volume for the government?
Actually, there is nothing wrong about that because the ruling party, EPRDF, is formed from different four organizations, including the OPDO, which is ruling the Oromia regional state, and there is nothing wrong because he is the founder of OPDO, and also he used to be the president of the Oromia regional state. So it is both flags are legal, so he is upholding the Ethiopian flag, and also he recognizes the flag of his region.
Monday is the opening of parliament and without the speaker, and this is also the anniversary of the state of emergency.
Concerning the resignation of Honorable Abdullah Gamenda, he has already issued his resignation letter, but now he is active speaker of the House of the Federal Parliament. That means tomorrow the parliament opens. It means that there is an active speaker. Because he already submitted his resignation, doesn't mean that he has left office.
So the parliament will be opened by the acting speaker?
Now, what we know is, unless another speaker is elected, the current incumbent speaker has the mandate. That means we will see the response either tomorrow or the days that follow. But now we cannot say that Abdullah is a former speaker. He is active speaker.
Are you suggesting that the government will accept or will not accept his resignation?
Actually, I cannot talk about that. We have to wait and see whether the government accepts it or not, because we cannot predict that decision now.
Lenjeri Lencho is Ethiopia's information minister. He was speaking with me from the capital, Addis Ababa. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte, Washington, and today is Monday, October 9th. Daybreak Africa time is coming up at 15 minutes past the hour. Former Ugandan presidential candidate Dr. Chisa Besigye of the main opposition Forum for Democratic Change says the situation in Uganda today is no different from what it has been over the last 55 years. This as Uganda marks 55 years of independence from British colonial rule today, Monday. President Yoweri Museveni has been president for 32 of the 55 years. Today also comes as Uganda is currently embroiled in a controversial debate in parliament whether to remove presidential age limit from the constitution. Besigye says Uganda's main challenge since independence has been the orderly transfer of power. President Museveni has said his critics are misinformed about the achievements of his administration. But Dr. Besigye says the country is insecure today because the security forces are about regime preservation.
Within 65 years, all people who have led our country have done so with the use of guns. The current leader, Mr. Museveni, came into office nearly 32 years ago after a five-year bitter war that consumed more than 500,000 people. And so political instability has been a constant feature of Uganda's 55 years. The independence constitution was violently overthrown in 1966 when the military attacked the Kingdom of Buganda. At that time, the president of the country was the King of Buganda.
Dr. Besigye, let me say that President Yoweri Museveni has said that people like you who criticized his administration are misinformed because he says that Uganda has never had peace than it has had under his leadership.
Of course, Mr. Museveni is entitled to say whatever he wants, but the reality has to be taken away. I'm sure if you talk to him, he will not contest the massive unemployment, the massive poverty. Lack of security is not the absence of the war. It is the presence of justice. It is the presence of social services. It is the presence of social security. When there is no social security, as there isn't in our country, we cannot talk about security. And indeed, as we celebrate, or as we mark 65 years, insecurity is clearly rampant. And that is because the security, rather than concentrating on ensuring that there is security for people and their property, the preoccupation of security institutions is in the preservation of the regime survival, regime protection.
You were talking a while ago, Dr. Besigye, about the debate in Parliament over the removal of presidential age limits. Are you the opponents losing the battle?
Well, James, as I have just told you, the lasting challenge for our country since independence is orderly transfer of power. The political upheaval, the economic challenges we have are subsequent upon political mismanagement. The fundamental problem of our country is the political mismanagement.
Dr. Chisa Besigye is the former presidential candidate of Uganda's main opposition forum for democratic change. He was speaking with me from the capital, Kampala, home to half the world's mountain gorilla and 50% of world bird species. Conservation tourism marketing remains a challenge for Uganda. In the first ever Conservation Finance Giants Forum, Uganda, also known as the Pearl of Africa, last Friday got an opportunity to market its beauty in a bid to lure more investors and tourists into the country. Halima Atumane reports from Kampala.
Uganda held the first ever Conservation and Tourism Investment Forum Friday, gathering senior business figures from around the world. Emphasis was put on new marketing strategies, particularly the need for private sector investment to complement traditional sources of conservation capital. The government's intention was to show investors that Uganda is open for responsible investment in the conservation sector and for conservation organizations to take note of the opportunity to co-manage protected areas with the government. Stephen Asimwe is a chief executive director, Uganda Tourism Board.
We've got forests, we've got the Rift Valley, we've got the mountains, we've got the national parks, we've got places near falls, we've got places near rivers, lakes. So basically, we are selling locations which offer the customer at the end of the day a fantastic experience that gives them a sense of saying, I want to stay here.
The investors made it clear what they needed from the government. Max Graham, founder of the elephant conservation group Space for Giants, one of the organizers of the conference, says Uganda has great conservation and tourism potential, but needs investment.
It's the opportunity for the first time, really, to have a very willing partner in government to create the right environment. Political security, you know, security generally, great apes and the opportunity to create a unique circuit, and then finally, a willing partner in government to help make the transaction simple. So currently, across most of Uganda's protected areas, they're under-resourced. They don't have the investment to maintain the roads. They don't have the investment, and this is critical, to protect their wildlife populations.
Reassurance is what they got from President Yoweri Museveni.
We have been able to establish a strong security system, a strong army, which has been able to defeat terrorism. Then we had some strong anti-poaching measures. That's how the elephant population came up. Then we have been able to work on some roads, like for instance, Makshan Falls, and now we have done one for Chivare Forest Reserve. We are working on the roads to Karamoja, eventually to Kidepo, even towards Bwindi.
In 2016, Uganda received 1,300,000 tourists, accounting for $1.3 billion, with hope of growing tourism figures to 4 million by 2020. Halima Athmani for VOA News, Kampala.
Alexis Okiowo, a staff writer at The New Yorker, has just released a book this month entitled A Moonless, Starless Sky, Ordinary Women and Men Fighting Extremism in Africa. It focuses on how a few ordinary people in various countries wage their own small-scale but impactful battles against extremism. Stories include a female basketball player in Somalia, a Mauritanian man fighting against human slavery, and more. Okiowo spoke to Ricky Stryak about why she wanted to tell what she calls these extraordinary stories of hope.
Well, because I'm focusing on such extreme situations, you know, I'm talking about terrorism, talking about slavery, I wanted to also talk about the people who are affected by it. And usually, you know, in the cases that I found, the people had pretty ordinary lives before their lives were turned upside down by extreme circumstances. You know, all the characters in the book usually had one or two supportive parents. They had siblings that they loved until radical things happened and their lives were changed. I wanted to kind of focus on the fact that even though these situations were extreme, the people at the center of them, the people who were affected by them, were not that different from, you know, you and I or people who hadn't gone through these situations.
How important do you think it is to give people information about these events, but in a different way?
Yeah, it was very important because for me, what I had noticed is that a lot of times, not every time, but a lot of times when these conflicts were covered, it was often from the perspective of the perpetrators in some cases, trying to understand the terrorist or extremist groups who were perpetuating these crises, which is good to know. It's helpful and important to know, but it can be alienating to readers, you know, to read again about, yes, these militants who have extremist ideology and want to, you know, create conflict and chaos so that they can achieve their goals. And yesterday they killed 50 people and, you know, the week before they killed 200. It can be a lot, and it can be alienating and easy to tune out just by reading these stories of death and destruction without any seeming points of hope. And so I thought by talking to people on the other side of it, people who are going through it, but not to paint them as victims, because they're not just victims.
That was Alexis Okiowo, author of a book entitled A Moonless, Starless Sky, Ordinary Women and Men Fighting Extremism in Africa. She was speaking to Ricky Stryak from New York. Time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. Good Monday morning to you, Samson.
Good Monday morning to you, James. We begin with the 2018 FIFA World Cup qualifying matches played across Africa this past weekend. Nigeria became the first country in Africa to qualify for the World Cup in Russia as a 73rd minute strike by Arsenal forward Alex Iwobi handed the Super Eagles a 1-0 success over Zambia in Uyo, ensuring top spot in Group B with a game to spare. Nigeria now have 13 points with second place Zambia on 7. Cameroon are on 6 points after defeating Algeria 2-0. Team captain John Obi Mikel says the ticket to South Africa came after the determination and hard work of the players to ensure they succeed.
I'm very proud. I'm very honored to be the captain of this team. Great, great players, amazing players, great coaches as well. So we are ready. We are ready for World Cup. We have to make sure we prepare very well.
Late on Sunday, another English Premier League star, Liverpool's Mohamed Salah, proved Egypt's hero, scoring twice, including a last-gasp penalty to send the Pharaohs to their first World Cup finals since 1990. Elsewhere, Tunisia are just a point away from securing qualification for the 2018 World Cup after they trashed Guinea 4-1 on Saturday. Ghana quarterfinalists at the 2010 World Cup in South Africa were eliminated after managing only a goalless draw in Uganda when needing a win to keep their slim hopes alive. In the meantime, the Ghanaian Football Association has called for their controversial World Cup qualifier away to Uganda to be replayed after lodging an official protest to FIFA over refereeing decisions in the match in Kampala. The GFA filed the protest after South African referee Daniel Bennett ruled out Rafael Duamena's 93rd minute goal for offside as the match ended in a 0-0 draw. It cost Ghana a vital 3 points and effectively ended their chances of securing a place at the 2018 World Cup in Russia. Ghana coach Kwesi Appiah has said his Black Stars could have left the Mandela National Stadium with victory if the referee had not disallowed his dying minutes goal.
I don't want to go too much because I'm the kind of guy who doesn't like exercising referees, but I believe that this is not the best.
Ugandan Cranes captain Dennis Onyango blamed the lackluster performance on the football turf, which was ravaged by prayers held at the stadium 3 days earlier.
You know you're playing a World Cup game, which is very crucial for the country, which has never been at the World Cup, and you play on a pitch like this, it's a disgrace, and I'm not happy with the way things are done.
In Group D, South Africa recorded their first win with a 3-1 success against Burkina Faso, despite losing Bongani Zungu to a red card in the second half for retaliation. Bafana Bafana coach Stuart Buxton and team captain Itumelenge Kune react to their win this way.
We are the ones now that maybe can sneak in through the back door. They have the pressure on them. They don't want to throw it away. So I'm going to use that with the players, and I'm going to tell them, you know, take that last chance.
We played good, entertaining football today because our minds were right. We forgot about what happened against Cape Verde, and we were looking at the future.
Staying with Group D, Senegal topped the group after late goals from Diafra Sakho and Chiek Ndoye, which earned them a 2-0 win at Cape Verde. They now need to win one of their next month's doubleheader against South Africa to qualify, but all four teams remain in contention. DR Congo's 2-1 win in Libya ensured Group A will go down to the wire, although Tunisia need only a point at home to Libya to secure qualification after Youssouf M'Saknin's hat-trick fired them to a 4-1 win at Guinea. In Group C, Khalid Bouatib's hat-trick sent Morocco top with a 3-0 win over Gabon, who were eliminated. Ivory Coast dropped to second after drawing 0-0 in Mali on Friday, but they host Morocco in the winner-takes-all clash next month. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good day. And that's it for this Monday, October 9th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for starting your week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Samson Omale, along with our engineer Greg Burns, I'm James Butte in Washington, wishing you in Africa a very productive week.
Hello, I'm Lenore Moudou, host of Health Chat. Join us this Tuesday as we take a look at the health and well-being of young girls in light of the International Day of the Girl Child with our guest, Tausi Swedi, founder and chief executive officer of Childbirth Survivor International, CSI. For your questions, email us at healthchat@voanews.com. You can also reach us by phone to leave a message or to participate in the program. We will call you back. Dial the international code for the United States, then dial 202-205-9942. The U.S. country code is 1. Dial 45 after you hear the station ID. For listeners to call during the show, our telephone number is 202-691-3111. Health Chat this Tuesday at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.